Hello and welcome to Channels, the Nextflow podcast. This is episode 22, going out on September 11th, 2023. My name is Phil Yules. I'm a lead developer advocate at Sakura Labs, and today I'm very happy to be joined again by the one and only Ben Sherman. Ben, hi, hey, thanks everybody. For coming.
I'm back.
You're back. How's it going? Can you give yourself a 10-second intro just for anyone tuning in who's not heard you on the podcast before?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm a software engineer at Sakura, longtime user and lover of Nextflow, wrote my PhD on it. And now I'm working on it full time. And this is my, I don't know how many times it's been now, but I keep coming back to the podcast to tell you all my crazy ideas, all of our crazy ideas. It's a team effort for sure.
We were talking the other day, and I was saying, quite generally, I don't really care if anyone listens to this podcast or not, because I get a lot out of these. I learn a lot, and I enjoy it. So it's great to have you back, and it's great to sort of brainstorm and chat about these new and upcoming things and really dig into the guts of Nextflow a little bit.
Yeah.
So we've got a really nice lineup for today's episode. We're going to be talking all about kind of all things developer experience, if you like. So we're thinking about people who are sat there writing Nextflow pipelines and kind of how we can improve that experience. Now, we've run surveys. We run a community survey every year where we try and ask anyone who will tell us what you love about Nextflow, what you hate about Nextflow, and the ways you use Nextflow. And always we get kind of a few key signals that come back hard. The learning curve could be a bit better. People don't love Groovy, but they're like, yeah, fine, it's probably worth it, it's okay. And people say, God, the error messages drive me crazy. So that's where the title, we're gonna dig into that. We're gonna touch on a couple of other things first, but we're gonna talk a little bit about error messages and what the kind of work we're doing to try and help with that. We're also going to talk a little bit about some code formatting and linting, which is especially important if you're doing lots of collaboration work on your Nextflow code. But I thought, first of all, we could kick off with a little mention of kind of interactive debugging and code editor integration. Now, Ben, did you see our podcast last week or like 2 weeks ago?
I did. I watched it yesterday, in fact.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I'm not completely proud of how well that went. So anyone who hasn't seen that one, it's Chris and Marcel and myself were messing around with a new feature that is very cutting edge. I mean, it's sat in a pull request at the time anyway, unmerged, and we have no idea what we're doing. But we did manage to get Paolo's attention, who has now actually merged a pull request into the development version of Nextflow for this feature. So that's pretty cool. In 2 weeks, we've come a long way. Ben, I was hoping you could just talk a little bit about it. Like, I mean, we had no idea what we were doing. We were just like randomly clicking buttons. Like, what was going on there?
Well, I certainly appreciate your willingness to take risks live. That was very fun to watch. But in any case, so what they were doing in that past episode, this is a sort of it's a common form of interactive debugging called breakpoint debugging. All the big IDEs have it for all sorts of different languages. Basically, the way it works is that you usually in your editor, there's a little area in the side of next to the file, you can click on it and add a little red dot to a specific line in your code. That's called a breakpoint. And then you can, as long as your language supports it, you run your code in whatever debug mode so that when it reaches that breakpoint, that line in your code, the runtime pauses and exposes some information to the IDE, gives you like some kind of user interface that allows you to basically inspect all of the variables and whatever else is going on. And then from then on, you can have it resume as normal, or you can have it step line by line, and so that you can see exactly how things change. I know in certain fields, this kind of thing is absolutely critical, like in game development. Like, I couldn't imagine developing a game without a breakpoint debugger. Nextflow is a little bit more interesting because of the way it works. But basically, we had Jorge, a guy who used to work at Sakura, he figured out how to enable this debugging feature in Nextflow The way this works is that, you know, you have a Nextflow script, right? It's basically a Groovy script with a couple of language extensions. So when you feed that to Nextflow, Nextflow launches a little Groovy shell and runs that script. And so basically there's a lot of settings in that Groovy shell that Nextflow uses. And one of them is, you know, enable debugging. And so basically the PR that Phil mentioned where that was merged recently, that was basically just enabling that feature and exposing it as a command line option. So now if you do Nextflow run, what is it, /remote or /remote debug or something, then it'll use that setting. And then if you integrate that with your whatever IDE, like Marcel was using IntelliJ IDEA, supposedly it works with VS Code, although I haven't tried it. Then you can go from there.
So it's kind of a bit more complicated than it might be with Python or something, because this Nextflow is sort of acting as a middleman and kind of compiling Groovy code for you, I guess. So it's not, but we're using a Groovy debugger, and Nextflow sort of passing our Nextflow scripts through to that for us then.
Right. So ultimately your Nextflow script is converted into just a regular Groovy script. So all the language extensions like process and workflow, all those special keywords, is basically just syntax sugar that boils down to regular Groovy code. So eventually you reach a point where there is a fully defined Groovy script. And yeah, the Groovy debugger is used for that. Now, the thing about this is that there's a limited usefulness to this here. Because the thing you got to understand about how this works is that you have your Nextflow script, which defines your pipeline, right? So what Nextflow does is it runs your script all the way through, but it still hasn't run the pipeline at that point. Running the script only serves the function of defining the pipeline. So when it like executes that workflow, like your final workflow, it's not actually running the workflow, it's defining it, and it basically that process outputs the DAG, right, the directed acyclic graph, which is the pipeline. So it runs the script all the way through, and then it has the pipeline definition, and then it runs the pipeline, and that's when you start seeing the tasks being executed and stuff like that. So there's only certain things you can really debug with this breakpoint debugger, right? You could debug the process of defining the workflow, and just making sure that like all the variables line up, but debugging specific tasks, I don't think you'll be able to do that because the tasks don't get executed at that point.
Yeah. That was kind of what we were thinking about as well. It sort of tallies. It's like, it's particularly useful for messing around with channels. And if you're using lots of channel operators and stuff and trying to work out, what things are actually looking like after you do your map function or whatever, then this is when this feature shines. But, right. But when you actually are looking into what's happening within what's that command line tool doing, then it's too late. Then you need to start digging into work directories.
Yeah. So that's where with debugging Nextflow, this is really like is multifaceted, right? Like there's the breakpoint debugging, which serves one aspect. And then I would say the Nextflow log itself is another form of debugging, and specifically if you enable the trace logging. So there's a command line option. If you say Nextflow-trace Nextflow run, then that will basically just enable a bunch of trace logs that normally don't get printed. And you can use that to glean a lot of extra information about what's going on. For example, if you wanted to see like, you know, every time a task is executed, what are the actual inputs being received, like that's triggering that task execution. I believe that stuff gets logged, a bunch of other stuff. So that's one aspect. And then also the task directories, like you said, are designed to be very like self-contained and reproducible. So they actually serve very well as a debugging mechanism. That's why you see whenever a task fails, often you'll see that error message that never quite seems to be exactly the same. That's because it's randomly selected from about four different ones. That'll basically say like, hey, if you want to test this task that failed, just go into the directory and run the command.run script exactly as you would normally. and you'll probably figure out what went wrong, right? So those scripts also are good, that they serve that aspect of the debugging. And so between those three different things, the breakpoint, the trace logs, and the wrapper scripts, that should just about cover all of your runtime debugging needs.
Awesome. I never noticed that those messages vary, or if I did, I've forgotten. It's a nice little like Easter egg tucked away in there.
Yeah, it always, it was just one of those things I remember seeing, like I swear this message was different than last time I did it, but like, how? And then when I finally joined Sakara and I was going through the code base, I discovered, there's a whole list here. It just picks one. So. Now, one more thing I'll say about the breakpoint debugging, there's sort of a nice side effect of that was that PR you mentioned that Paulo merged has a side effect of hopefully improving some of the debugging experience in terms of the errors that Nextflow reports. It basically just had to do with like the way that Nextflow was loading the scripts into the Groovy shell. Paulo changed that around a little bit to support the debugging. As a side effect, you should also hopefully see better error messages where because ideally what you want is the error message to be like, hey, this script, this file at this line, this is where the error happened. That happens sometimes, maybe even most of the time, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you don't quite get the right script name. So some things Paulo did there should help with that. But I just wanted to mention that too, because that's related to what we're talking about.
Nice. Yeah. And if anyone interested in using this, it's now merged into the kind of main master branch of Nextflow, so it will come out in the next Edge release. And I think we still need to write up quite a lot of documentation and stuff. It's not really documented anywhere, but there will be documentation. and Marcel's promised me a blog post, so.
All right.
But you've nicely dovetailed us into our next topic there of error messages. I think probably speaking for the community here, one of the worst nightmares is there's two error messages that I fear in Nextflow. One is something along the lines of couldn't compile, blah, blah, blah. Which sort of tells you something was wrong somewhere. And the other one was if it tells you that something wrong with like a parentheses in like main.nf with workflow or something. It's just like top level. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's where the entire pipeline is being executed, is in those three lines of code. That does not tell me where the error is. Are you telling me that there might be some kind of some hope for rescuing those situations, or am I getting too excited too soon?
Actually, there is hope. More than I anticipated. This was one of the things that was mentioned quite a bit when I'd made that language improvements discussion. Was people mentioned a whole variety of different error messages that they encounter, where, you know, like you said, it's like, hey, there's an error somewhere in your script, in your, you know, 1,000-line script, or if you're lucky, it might be, hey, there's an error in this process somewhere in it. And so, you know, we started cataloging them and trying to see like which ones we can deal with. You know, most of these, you know, first of all, you know, like why do all these errors happen? Like, why do the errors suck sometimes? I mean, it basically has to do with the fact that Nextflow is this DSL. So like I said, the Nextflow script is basically just a Groovy script with some syntax sugar, right? And in the process of, in order to support that syntax sugar, you know, it kind of creates some weird gray areas where, you know, certain kinds of errors just kind of fall through the cracks and can't be handled properly as if you had just been writing like regular Groovy code. And so, and you know, it's kind of like cancer. There's all kinds of different errors that can happen, and the solution for each one is different for each one. So, you know, like I said, we've gone through a bunch of them, and in some cases, we can add a little bit of error checking code to Nextflow to improve it, so that you actually just get a better error message entirely, or you get an error message earlier.
You catch it before it goes through to the underlying Groovy, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best case scenario. One of the examples of this was recently where if you defined a tuple input and you forgot a comma between one of the tuple elements, so you would think that would just give you a syntax error, like, hey, there's a missing comma right here. Actually, what it would do is it would fully parse and compile. And then when you run the process, it would say, hey, this process has already been defined. I don't know how Groovy even gets to that, but that's what would happen. And so, of course, you know, it's like Nextflow is just hallucinating.
That's the kind of thing, you know, you see on Slack, people coming and we've got the table flipping emoji coming up. You know?
What? Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys. Yeah, I feel the exact same way. So fortunately, I was able to find a way to fix that by basically adding a little error check. So it catches that as a parse error rather than, you know, when it's running the pipeline. Another one was, and this one's a little bit more borderline, but it was possible to import a workflow from another module and then define a workflow in the current script by the same name. And that would cause an infinite recursion, which would lead to a Stack Overflow error. And so that was fixed by just adding an error check, you know, just like, hey, you've already defined this workflow, right? That was simple enough. Then we get to some of the harder ones, which the main one is in processes and workflows, there are certain kinds of syntax errors that instead of Groovy telling you the exact line where the syntax error happens, it will just say unexpected token, you know, opening brace. And that will be the opening brace of the process or workflow. Usually unexpected token, when you see that error, it makes you think that there's an error before that. And so that would cause people to like be like, okay, did I name the process weirdly? Or is there something before this process that was weird? But in reality, there's usually like a missing comma or a missing colon, or one of the weirdest ones actually is if you have a backslash in your process script to denote, you know, like a multi-line bash command, if you put a space after that backslash, that will also cause this kind of error. For some reason that it like tries to escape the space with the backslash, and I don't know. This is the worst case kind of error where like there's not really anything I can do to prevent it because it's kind of a limitation of like the Groovy parser slash the interaction between the Groovy and the DSL. So in that case, what we did was we just try to contextualize the error. So basically at the top level with the script parser will listen for that error. If it sees an error that says unexpected token something, it basically adds a message saying, hey, if you got this error, the error is probably actually happening in the body somewhere. So look there, don't look before it. And hopefully that will, while we can't point to the exact line where it went wrong, we can at least point users in the right direction so that they're not lost, you know.
Yeah.
So
like you say, at least if you're looking in the right place, you stand a better chance.
Yeah. So I think those three different error messages, three or four, probably describe, you know, the basic different archetypes that we run into. You know, there's various other ones aside from that, and usually we can solve it in one of those ways. And so we've basically done that for a bunch of different errors. And if people are curious, if you go onto the Nextflow GitHub, there's a label now called error-improvements that we tag onto all of the relevant issues and PRs. So you can go on there and see, you know, what we're dealing with. What Phil's showing you now are the open issues. The ones I'm talking about, of course, would be under closed issues. So you can see, like, the ones we've dealt with, which are quite a few. So we hope all these tiny little improvements will add up to a much improved developer experience, at least when you're running your pipeline.
It's a long list actually of things you've done there. I'm just looking at the dates. I mean, the oldest one goes back to July 2021. That's been closed. There seems to be a lot quite recently, like some this week, even quite a lot in July. What kind of timeline are we? When can people start to see these things come into their kind of production runs into stable releases and things?
So I think just about all of them are in the latest Edge release, which is 23.8. 1. It's rare that we have a .1 Edge release, but we put one out this time. So yeah, certainly by the next stable release in October, the 23.10, they should all be in there.
Nice. Yeah. I think I was talking to Paolo the other day. We're going to try and schedule a podcast to talk about that stable release when it comes out and kind of dig through the changelog a little bit and pull out some highlights. So we'll be able to double check then. But like you say, if those ones are already merged, then safe to say it'll be coming to people's consoles soon.
And one more thing I'll mention here about these error improvements is that a broader strategy that approach that we're looking into is to also see if there's improvements we can make to the DSL itself to make it less prone to these kinds of errors. Because so there are some aspects of like how, like the process syntax and workflow syntax that are a little bit odd in terms of like how it's actually implemented and converted into the Groovy code. So there may be some things that we could improve that would probably be in like some kind of DSL 3, right? Which I think if we do a DSL 3, it would be a much easier transition than DSL 2. It's not going to be something radical like it's mostly just going to be minor like syntax improvements that I think should help us avoid some of these errors. Of course, we won't know for sure until we build it and see how it works. But that's also one thing that we can certainly talk about in more detail in another episode.
Prevention is better than cure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Shall we move on? Next on the list, we've got a topic very close to my heart. We've got talking a little bit about code formatting and code linting and things. Now, a bit of context for those who don't know me so well. I've been working with NFCore for a long time. I've done some bite-sized talks about code linting in the past. We use code linting and code auto formatters a lot in NFCore. So any of the Python code, for example, we use Black, and then we use Prettier for JSON and on the website, JavaScript, TypeScript. And I love these tools because it means you don't have to think about style at all. You just write code, you hit save, and everything reformats, and it does it the same way for everyone. So there's no arguments about whether it's better to do it this way or that way. Even like in the Python code, like, you know, there's no argument about what order we should import packages. Like isort just deals it. It's just all good. And I've wanted this for the longest time for Nextflow. I have spent a long time, longer than I would like to admit, with some people's pull requests, sitting there indenting. Tab, 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 tab. For spaces, of course. Trying to fix the white space, because just as a reviewer, it's impossible to read Nextflow code if it doesn't have your standard kind of indentation. I think code formatting is so important when you have lots of people collaborating on a single code base, kind of reduce that overhead. Now, Ben, maybe you can tell us more about this kind of where we are and how far we've come. I know there's quite a long history to this. It's not like no one's tried to do this for Nextflow. What have we done so far and what's the plan?
Yeah, so currently I believe there are mainly two IDE tools out there for Nextflow. There's one for Sublime and there's one for VS Code. The Sublime one is under NFCore, and then Nextflow maintains the VS Code extension. Both of these provide, I believe, some basic syntax highlighting, some basic snippets where you can start typing something. I think there's like a shortcut for like defining a process and stuff like that.
Yeah, in Sublime though, is there? I don't think the VS Code one has that.
But yeah, so the Sublime one actually has some pretty interesting capabilities with like completion, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, like it can do some completions with conda and containers, I think. And I think that's all that they both provide, those two things. So as far as like linting and code formatting and obviously there's even more kinds of code completion that could be done. I don't know of any efforts around that. There are some Groovy tools. So for example, there's one called NPM Groovy Lint that can lint your Groovy code for you. Although I think a lot of the linting rules that it uses maybe are not as relevant to Nextflow pipelines. It's it's useful for a code base like Nextflow, just like a pure Groovy code base. But I think if we really wanted to do linting with Nextflow, we would need something more for that. And so, like you said, there have been a number of different efforts on this front, aside from just trying to discover what all is out there. One of the first things that we looked into was to try and develop basically like a formal grammar for Nextflow, since, you know, technically it's just Groovy, but, you know, maybe it'd be nice if we could have a grammar that actually has constructs like the process and workflow and module includes as like first class syntax constructs, and then maybe a parser based on that grammar could be a little bit more robust against some of these weird error messages, right?
I mean, because we've the VS Code plugin for Nextflow that gives syntax highlighting, right? So there's some kind of level of where the IDE is understanding the code, but presumably that's not enough for the format.
VS Code extensions, they have this thing called TextMate, so it's a TextMate grammar. It's a sort of a minimal grammar based on like regular expressions. And a lot of times that is sufficient for doing syntax highlighting. You can get just about everything you need that way. As opposed to having like a language server with a parser that actually parses the whole code, gets the AST and does all this other stuff, which you need for more advanced features.
So AST is abstract syntax tree, right? And that kind of makes sense, right? You can see the word process and then highlight that in blue, and that's kind of easy to do. But to understand the hierarchy of whether that's inside an if block or whether it's, you know, to get the white space, you need something a bit more complex.
Yeah, so that's where you need some kind of parser. Now there's the Groovy parser, which you know obviously works already. Nextflow has, like I said, Nextflow uses the Groovy parser and basically tacks on a couple of extra, we call them AST transformations, that basically define how to convert the Nextflow syntax sugar into pure Groovy code, right? So if you put those things together, that gives you a Nextflow parser. That's what Nextflow uses. And then what I was talking about with a formal grammar would be, we would define a whole new grammar based on the Groovy one and then just add on some of the Nextflow stuff. And then there are tools you can use to generate a parser. So it actually generates code, an entire code base, based on a sort of declarative grammar where you sort of describe the hierarchy of the syntax. Then it generates the parser. That gets you a parse tree, which is not quite the same thing as an abstract syntax tree. It's similar, right? It is a tree and it contains syntax constructs, but it's not quite processed as the abstract syntax tree. Not all languages do this. I think some languages just go straight from the grammar to the AST, but with Groovy, at least there's another step. That was the wall that we hit, basically. So when we were trying to define our own Nextflow grammar, I thought that was going to get us to like a Nextflow AST, but actually it just gets us to a Nextflow parse tree. And then if you want to get to the AST, you got to rewrite even more of all this code that's already implemented in Groovy, which is all open source, but you know, it's a lot. The Groovy grammar is actually pretty complicated, which is, you know, because, you know, there's usually this trade-off between, you know, a language being easy to write for the user versus how complicated that language is to implement. So Groovy leans more towards, let's make the syntax as easy and accessible as possible. In order to do that, we have to make the compiler do more work, right? So the grammar is much more complicated, which means trying to build anything off of the Groovy grammar is going to be a massive effort. And so, you know, we did that for a bit, and I've since decided to just pivot from that and not bother with that, because I think I found a simpler approach. The simpler approach is to just reuse the code that Nextflow already does. So take that function in Nextflow that takes the Groovy shell and the Nextflow AST transforms and just put that in a language server, so that you can get that sort of that parsing service on demand, right?
What's a language server?
So a language server is a thing that I think Microsoft came up with when they developed VS Code, so that to try and get all these different IDEs to come around a single standard for providing language services. because I think currently most like Sublime, IntelliJ, Visual Studio, Atom, all of these different IDEs have to implement their own like language parsing services and, you know, linting and code completion and all of that stuff. So the idea of the language server, and specifically the language server protocol, is to provide a standard so that, say, if you want to, you know, implement these language services for Python, you implement one Python language server and then you use that everywhere. VS Code, you know, NeoVim can do this. I think IntelliJ still has its own. I don't know if IntelliJ supports language servers, but, you know, any IDE that supports language servers can then reuse this same thing. And so this would be the idea for us. We develop a Nextflow language server, and then, you know, you have to, somebody has to hook that up to each of the different IDEs. So we'd have a VS Code plugin that uses it. And then again, I can't remember if Sublime supports language servers either, but any IDE that supports it, you know, we would do that. So would save us a lot of effort. Some people are critical of language servers, saying that it's kind of like overkill, you know, because you now have a whole, you literally have a server running on your computer, right? That's actually what it's doing. It's running in the background and it's just sort of handling requests. Every time you open a new file, every time you edit a file, it's sending a tiny little request to that language server saying, hey, I just made this edit. Can you, you know, give me the goods, give me the linting and the syntax highlighting and the code completion and all of that stuff. Every time you start typing something and it's in a context where there's some completions that are possible, you know, it's sending that to the language server and the language server is responding saying, hey, here are all the completions that are possible. And then it's displaying that dropdown list to you, right?
So that's the kind of features where people using other language will be familiar, where you start typing a function name and it sort of pops up and you hit open brackets and it shows you a little pop-up saying what all the arguments should be and stuff like that when you're talking about code completion.
Yeah, going even further, if you're using a typed language, right, It can look at the type of the variable you have, and then you click dot, then it looks up, like with Java, it would look up the class type of that variable and then it would give you all the methods that are available. So, you know, this is, you know, all the IDEs are doing this, but they're not necessarily doing it through a language server. They might be using some bespoke implementation. Like with IntelliJ, IntelliJ probably has some of the best like language services for Java and Groovy and all those JVM languages, but they're probably custom built. I don't think they use a language server. So
what goes into building, and you say you just take the code from Nextflow, but I mean, what does a language server look like?
So that's the first piece, is that your language server needs to be able to parse code on demand, right? So you need some little module within that that is basically the same parser that Nextflow uses. And the nice thing about Nextflow is that you can also use it like a library. So it's like available as a package on the Maven repository. If you're writing like a Java application or a Groovy application, you can just import some of the different modules from Nextflow. So that's what we would do. We would import the parsing code from Nextflow and reuse it. That's the easy part. The hard part then is, okay, so now you've parsed the code, you've got an abstract syntax tree, you got the AST. So now you got to analyze that AST to do whatever it is you want to do. If we're talking about linting, you're going to have you have to define a set of linting rules that you want to apply, right? So you might say like, okay, you know, when you define a process, all the different sections like input, output, script, they should be tabbed over one. And then, you know, all the items under them should also be tabbed the same amount. None of this like input and then like the actual input is tabbed over more, or maybe that's what you want. What you define some linting rule around that. So this is including white space, right?
I feel some flame wars coming.
Yeah. So then I guess this wouldn't be the AST. This would be the concrete syntax tree, which includes all the white space. AST doesn't have the white space. So you would go through that tree and you would look for, you know, processes, and then you would look for how that stuff is defined. And then you would check and see if that structure of the tree matches what the rule requires. And if it doesn't, then you see if maybe you can auto-fix it, if the user wants that, and then maybe you try to auto fix it, which is possible with a lot of this white space stuff. And so that'd be for linting. For code completion, it's like I said before, you would have different rules set up for like in certain contexts. you know, here are the completions that are possible. The main contexts I can think of that are useful are process directives, configuration options, and I guess operators. So when you're doing a chain of operators, you know, maybe you can get a list of the ones that are available. With process directives, same thing. I think configuration options is really where the code completion come in handy, because I often see a lot of errors where somebody will say like put like a AWS option inside the process block or something like that. Or they'll put an option in the wrong scope, and then, you know, and the problem with that too is that the Nextflow configuration doesn't really have like strict like schema or anything. So if you put an option in the wrong scope, or if you misspell an option or something, it doesn't really tell you. It just, that option just won't be applied. And so that makes it difficult.
The worst kind of, it just silently disappears and you're like, why is it not being applied? Or like, if you forget to use it, if you use a colon instead of an equal sign, that's another one that gets me.
Yeah, that too. Well, that I think that will be a very important linting rule to have.
One of the ones that jumps to my mind for code completion is if you have channels which are process output, and you know we have named channels, being able to auto complete with named channels would be great. Stuff like that would be real quality of life improvements.
Yeah. So with code completion, there's all sorts of things that are possible. I mean, the Ruby, a Ruby language server probably has all that stuff for like standard types and stuff. But I think for Nextflow, there's a lot of sort of Nextflow specific code completions we need to do. Also, I wanted to mention, because I brought up the config, that also, there's sort of a two-pronged strategy there, right? Where we want to have the code completion in the IDE, but also I think it'd be nice to have some sort of strict config mode where if you enable it, it will tell you if you define a config option that's invalid somehow. So I've actually got a PR for that. People can go, you can go find it. Honestly, it's not too hard to find. Maybe Phil will put it in the description, but basically it's something that I think would be a nice little opt-in feature that will help for the instances where you, not where you forget a config option, but you define a config option that doesn't exist, or you put it in the wrong place or something like that. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, found it. 4201, add strict config mode.
So you guys can go play with this now if you want.
Nice. I haven't seen this one. So this is like a JSON schema type thing where you sort of, you've written down what the valid scopes of a config are, or how does this one work?
The approach that I settled on is that because the configuration is defined in the code base in a very decentralized manner, like there's no one big like config class, like these are all the config options. Basically, every different module defines the config options that it uses. And basically in the code, you can just query any config option you want. You can just make up one. And if it's defined in the config file, then you'll get it back, right? But then the downside of that is that you can't enforce like invalid options. So basically what I did is I went through all the different modules that use a config scope. And if you go through the docs and you look at all the different config scopes, most of the config scopes, each one corresponds to a single class in the Nextflow code base for the most part. And so I basically just have that class defines the valid config options that are in that scope. And then it will check at runtime, you know, if there's any invalid options, and then give you a warning or error if there's something.
That seems like it could be really useful for pipeline developers, like maybe not end users, but, you know, when you're writing your pipeline, at least you're being a bit more careful, or, you know, like you say. Huh. Very cool. So with the language server stuff, I mean, it sounds like you've got a pretty good roadmap laid out there. Like you've got an idea of what needs doing. How far along are we, and what is there that's left to do?
So I think the phase we're in now is evaluation. So there's a couple of different Groovy language servers out there. And so I need to look at them and figure out which one is the best one to build off of. I guess, you know, the parser is there, right? The Nextflow parser is there. The question is, like, regarding all this, like, linting and code completion, do any of these Groovy language servers implement some of these constructs, at least for pure Groovy, that we could build on and reuse. Maybe it'd be easier to like, you know, adapt one of that stuff into the Nextflow stuff rather than just writing it from scratch, because I've never written a language server before. I'm very excited about the prospect. I've always been curious about language servers. Also, I don't know if it'll be me writing it or if somebody else will, but yeah, so we're trying to evaluate, you know, what are the best projects? What's the best project to build off of? Jordy has actually done a little bit of effort in this because, you know, Jordy's got his fingers in everything, right? So he's done all, he's tried everything. He took a Ruby language server and forked it and started adding some stuff for Nextflow. So we've got a little bit of stuff there. So yeah, it's just evaluation, and then there's just a lot of cranking out some code, you know, nice. Some good old fashioned development.
Jordy, for listeners, is another engineer at Sekera. Jordy Dupont has been around before Sekera. and yeah, like you say, he's a bit of a code wizard. He sits in the wings, but has involvement in most things. I've got him pegged for another episode in a little while to talk about some other topics. So we'll get him on the podcast soon. Nah, that's some exciting stuff, though. I mean, when we talk about kind of feature lists and things we'd like to see, I mean, I've had this on my little personal list for years. So the idea that it might actually be achievable and maybe even just around the corner is exciting to hear.
Yeah, I think the code completions will be very useful. Like I said, the linting and code formatting will certainly be good for giving us an opportunity to try and converge on a standard style. Even if we don't converge, like, that's okay. People can have their own styles. But another important aspect of that is actual just like parsing for syntax errors, right? So now, you know, if there's a syntax error in your code, you'll get it while you're developing the pipeline and not when you actually run the pipeline.
Takes us full circle back to the live debugging almost at the start. Not quite breakpoints, but, you know, same thing, seeing errors in your code editor, in your IDE.
Yeah, again, it's much better to catch the error in the IDE even than having to use breakpoints. You know, as powerful as they are, like I'd rather do without them if I can.
Squiggly red line any day.
and even with these like weird, even with these more cryptic Nextflow errors, you know, the ones where we can't prevent them, but we just try to put a Band-Aid on them. Even there, it's much better to get that in the IDE than when you're running your pipeline. So we hope this will bring a lot of great improvements to the developer experience.
Yeah, multi-pronged
improvements.
Even if it's a whole block. I mean, if a whole block suddenly goes red after you hit a keystroke, then, you know, it's not difficult to figure out what caused that.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, Ben. Thank you. As is become custom with these podcast episodes, it's both inspiring and exciting. I can't wait to see some of this come to life. Anything else you want to cover, or are we exhausted your list for today?
Oh, I think I'm about done for today.
we've got more episodes scheduled with you as well, so it's not like you've run out of things to talk to us about yet.
Oh no.
Right, I'll quickly touch on a couple of our regular points. Firstly, new content, not any new blog posts lately. I don't think we've had a bit of a lull over the summer. But pretty much as we record this right now, there's a foundational Nextflow and NF Core training happening. So head over to the NF Core website, nfcore.com/events, or we even have a drop down now, you can go straight to training. So you can see we've got the foundational training happening right now. Now, if you're listening and you're like, oh, I missed it, don't worry. It's all going out on YouTube. So you can watch it whenever you fancy in your own time. But if you join us live, then it's all premiering at the same time. And we're taking questions in the Slack channels. So, you know, everyone who's following a training will be asking similar questions at the same time. And it's kind of nice to go through with a cohort of people. We also have two new trainings coming up later this month. So September 20th, we have the hands-on training, which is actually a very old training that Evan and Parcel and Paolo and maybe a couple of others, I think, developed at Sekera a long time ago. And it sort of went stale. It was DSL1, and we were going to just bin it. And Marcel's resuscitated that, and we'll be delivering that on September 20th. It's much shorter. It's just one kind of short session. Doesn't go into so much detail. but is really good as a quick way or a refresher to get into Nextflow. And then Rob Syme will be doing advanced training, which is another thing that people have been asking us for a long time. So right at the end of September, 27th, 28th, going out online. Join us if you want to. If you've already done the other training, you're already fairly proficient with writing Nextflow, but you want to become a Nextflow wizard. That's where to do it. He goes into all kinds of crazy, groovy, like magic. It's one of these ones where I'm like, yeah, I need to go to that. So lots of good stuff there, training wise. And then also, if you hop over to summit.nextflow.io, you can see all the details for the two summit events we have coming up in Barcelona and Boston. If you want to come to Barcelona, you need to be quick. Registration closes September 16th, which is, I think, 5 days if you're listening to this when this podcast goes out. So you need to act fast. The registration deadline for Boston is a bit longer. That's not until October 27th, and we've just recently shifted that as well, actually. So feel free to hop over there for any details. And just as of a couple of days ago, we now have the full agenda up for Barcelona, so you can now go through and see all of the talks and all of the abstracts. I think my name's there somewhere. There you go, community updates. I haven't written an abstract yet. And the Boston one's not live as we record this, but probably by the time it goes out, it will be. So if you're interested in what's going to go on, go and have a look. And even if you can't come in person, you can sign up to follow along remotely. Right. Thanks very much, Ben. It's been a pleasure, as always. I've learned a lot, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for getting up early. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in and joining us today. And hopefully see you again in a couple of weeks' time.
Bye, everybody. Thanks,
Ben. Bye. The